The bloody water reminded him of something. Some kind of dream he had once had, perhaps, but he could no longer for the life of him remember exactly what. He pulled the plug, let the water out of the sink, and filled it with clean water again, to which he added a cloudy splash of Dettol liquid disinfectant. The sharp, antiseptic smell seemed so utterly sensible and medicinal, a remedy for the oddness of his situation and his visitor. The girl leaned over the sink, and he splashed warm water over her arm and shoulder. Richard was never as squeamish as he thought he was. Or rather, he was astonishingly squeamish when it came to blood on screen. A good zombie movie or even an explicit medical drama would leave him huddled in a corner hyperventilating, with his hands over his eyes, muttering things like, "Just tell me when it's over." But when it came to real blood, real pain, he simply got on and did something about it. They cleaned out the cut, which was much less severe than Richard remembered it from the night before, and bandaged it up, and the girl did her very best not to wince in the process. And Richard found himself wondering how old she was, and what she looked like under the grime, and why she was living on the streets, and... "What's your name?" she asked. "Richard. Richard Mayhew. Dick." She nodded, as if she were committing it to memory. The doorbell rang. Richard looked at the mess in the bathroom and the girl and wondered how it would look to a sensible outside observer, such as, for example... "Oh, Lord," he said, realizing the worst. "I bet it's Jess. She's going to kill me." "Damage control. Damage control. Look," he told the girl, "you wait in here." He shut the door of the bathroom behind him and walked down the hall. He opened the front door and breathed a huge and quite heartfelt sigh of relief. It wasn't Jessica. It was, what, Mormons? Jehovah's Witnesses? The police? He couldn't tell. There were two of them, at any rate. They wore black suits, which were slightly greasy, slightly frayed. And even Richard, who counted himself among the sartorially dyslexic, felt there was something odd about the cut of the coats. They were the kind of suits that might have been made by a tailor 200 years ago who had had a modern suit described to him, but had never actually seen one. The lines were wrong, and so were the grace notes. "A fox and a wolf," thought Richard, involuntarily. The man in front, the fox, was a little shorter than Richard. He had lank, greasy hair of an unlikely orange colour, and a pallid complexion. And as Richard opened the door, he smiled widely and just a fraction too late, with teeth that looked like an accident in a graveyard. "A good morrow to you, good sir," he said, "on this fine and beautiful day."
Hello, said Richard.
"We are conducting a personal inquiry of a delicate nature, as it were, door to door. Do you mind if we come in?"
"Well, it's not very convenient right now," said Richard. Then he asked, "Are you with the police?"
The second of the visitors, a tall man, the one he had thought of as a wolf, his grey and black hair cut bristle short, stood a little behind his friend, holding a stack of photocopies to his chest. He'd said nothing until now, just waited, huge and impassive. Now he laughed, once, low and dirtily. There was something unhealthy about that laugh.
"The police, alas," said the smaller man. "We cannot claim that felicity. A career in law and order, although indubitably enticing, was not inscribed on the cards Dame Fortuna dealt to my brother and me. No, we are merely private citizens. Allow me to make introductions. I am Mr. Croup, and this gentleman is my brother, Mr. Vandemar."
They did not look like brothers. They did not look like anything Richard had seen before.
"Your brother?" asked Richard. "Shouldn't you have the same name?"
"I am impressed. What a brain, Mr. Vandemar. Keen and incisive isn't the half of it. Some of us are so sharp," he said,
as he leaned in closer to Richard, went up on tiptoes into Richard's face.
We could just cut ourselves.
Richard took an involuntary step backwards.
Can we come inside?
Asked Mr. Croup. What do you want? Mr. Croup sighed, in what he obviously imagined was a rather wistful manner.
Ah, we are looking for our sister, he explained. A wayward child, willful and headstrong, who has close to broken our poor dear widowed mother's heart.
Ran away, explained Mr. Vandemar quietly. He thrust a photocopied sheet into Richard's hands. She's a little funny, he added, and then he twirled one finger next to his temple to indicate that the girl was in fact a complete lunatic. Richard looked down at the paper. It said, Have you seen this girl? Beneath that was a photocopy grey photograph of a girl who looked to Richard rather like a tidier, cleaner, longer-haired version of the young lady he had left in his bathroom. Under that it said, Answers to the name of Doreen. Bites and kicks. Run away. Tell us if you saw her. Want her back. Reward paid. And below that, a telephone number. Richard looked back at the photograph. It was definitely the girl in his bathroom. No, he said, I haven't seen her, I'm afraid. I'm sorry. Mr. Vandemar, however, was not listening. He had raised his head and was sniffing the air like a man smelling something odd or unpleasant. Richard reached out to give him back his piece of paper, but the big man simply pushed past him and walked into the flat, a wolf on the prowl. Richard ran after him. What do you think you're doing? Will you stop that? Get out. Look, you can't go in there. Because Mr. Vandemar was headed straight for the bathroom, Richard hoped that the girl, Doreen, had had the presence of mind to lock the bathroom door, but no. It swung open at Mr. Vandemar's push. He walked in, and Richard, feeling like a small and ineffectual dog yapping at the heels of a postman, followed him in. It was not a large bathroom. It contained a bath, a toilet, a sink, several bottles of shampoo, a bar of soap, and a towel. When Richard had left it a couple of minutes before, it had also contained a rather dirty, bloody girl, a very bloody sink, and an open first aid kit. Now it was gleamingly tidy. There was nowhere the girl could have been hiding. Mr. Vandemar walked out of the bathroom and pushed open Richard's bedroom door, walked in, looked around.
I don't know what you think you're doing, said Richard, but if you two don't get out of my flat this minute, I'm phoning the police.
And then Mr. Vandemar, who had been in the process of examining Richard's living room, turned back towards Richard, and Richard suddenly realized he was very, very scared, like a small dog who had just discovered that what he had thought to be a postman was in fact an enormous dog-eating alien from the kind of film that Jessica had no time for. Richard found himself wondering whether Mr. Vandemar was the kind of person to whom you said, Don't hurt me, and if he was, whether it would do any good.
And then foxy Mr. Croup said, Why, yes, whatever can have come over you, Mr. Vandemar. It's grief for our dear sweet sibling, I'll wager, has turned his head. Now apologize to the gentleman, Mr. Vandemar.
Mr. Vandemar nodded and pondered for a moment. Thought I needed to use the toilet, he said. Didn't. Sorry.
Mr. Croup began to walk down the hall, pushing Mr. Vandemar in front of him. There, now, you'll forgive my errant brother his lack of social graces, I trust. Worry over our poor dear widowed mother and over our sister, whom, even as we speak, is wandering the streets of London unloved and uncared for, has nigh unhinged him, I'll be bound. But for all that, he's a good fellow to have at your side. Is't not so, stout fellow?
They were out of Richard's flat now, into the stairwell. Mr. Vandemar said nothing. He did not look nigh unhinged with grief. Croup turned back to Richard and essayed another foxy smile.
You will tell us if you see her, he said.
Goodbye, said Richard. Then he closed the door and locked it, and, for the first time since he'd lived there, he attached the security chain.